Welcome to This Week with State Senator Betsy Johnson. I am Michael Desmond. And Senator, you're a couple of weeks into this legislative session, 2012 version. How's it been going for you?
Well, it's an interesting thing. And let me preface my comments by saying this show is a delayed broadcast in some places. And so there are folks who will be hearing us speaking right now where things have changed since we recorded this. And I just want to preface it, but I think today is very instructive. And part of what you and I have tried to do from the inception of this show is to give a little peek behind the curtain about what's going on in the legislature. How does the legislature really do business? And today, about midway through our first voter-approved annual session, is an interesting snapshot in time because we are working on probably one of the most complicated bills where the policy is correct. And I'm going to come back and describe all of this a second, but I just want to set the scene. The policy on this bill is correct, but the devil's in the details. And because we are working so fast on this major piece of work, I think we're doing some of our absolute worst work as a deliberative body. So now let me frame the issue. What we're talking about is Senate Bill 1580 called Healthcare Transformation. And the background on this is that the Oregon Health Plan provides healthcare coverage to low-income Oregonians. Today, OHP is the health insurance provider for approximately 15% of all Oregonians and nearly 40% of all Oregon children, totaling about 600,000 people. So about 80% of these folks are served through prepaid managed care organizations called MCOs. The MCO receives a capitated payment for providing the health care, meaning that the payment is set regardless of the treatment provided. And about the other 20% of the beneficiaries receive care from health care providers on a fee-for-service basis. So that kind of sets the scene for what it is we're talking about. The problem here is that over time, going back, a number of years, the federal government began disaggregating the kinds of healthcare services. There's dental, mental, and physical health. And sometimes for a single patient, they could have different providers that don't talk to each other, which is not the most efficient delivery system. In addition, when someone utilizes service and they may need mental health as well as physical health, there is a propensity for that cohort of people to disproportionately use a lot of healthcare services, generally entering the healthcare system through the ER, the emergency room, which is the single most expensive portal of entry into healthcare. So in 2011, the legislature passed House Bill 3650, which fundamentally created a new delivery system to provide care to all of the Medicaid beneficiaries through a new organization called a CCO, a Coordinated Care Organization. The bill that we passed and I voted for was developed by a 47-member committee, if you can believe that, appointed by Governor Kitzhaber, and they worked hard. They worked really hard, with the idea that they wanted to provide better health care and better care at a lower cost. And they laid out what the characteristics of the CCOs would be, what services were provided, the interest in using community health care workers to try to help reduce the high usage by this small cohort of people. And it required the Oregon Health Authority to use a public process to further develop a new delivery system. All this sounds great. It asked that they report back to the legislature by 2012. So far, everything is great. Now the story starts to get a little more complicated. Instead of going to a policy committee where there is public testimony and the chance for people to weigh in, the bill, several bills that spoke to the issue of transformed health care, were all amalgamated and sent to Ways and Means. Ways and Means is not supposed to be a venue to do policy. But last night, the Ways and Means Subcommittee, the Healthcare Subcommittee, did policy. They did a lot of policy. And at 9:15, 9:30 last night, they were cranking out amendments that nobody had seen ahead of time. And they voted on them unanimously, and they shot them out very quickly in anticipation of the bill going to full Ways and Means tomorrow morning, Friday morning. By the time many of the participants got the opportunity to actually see what the amendments did, and in this instance, it's very complicated because it requires what's called hand engrossing, where you take the amendments and you actually interlineate them into the bill so that you can see in English what language, what the bill, what the amendments do to the bill. By the time the proponents and the opponents of the bill, or the affected parties, I should more clearly say, had a chance to describe or transcribe what the amendment did to the bill, they discovered that they had all kinds of questions. These amendments that, in my view, had been slipped in last night actually made huge changes. And so that was a problem. The other problem that I've had with this bill right straight along is that if we are transforming healthcare, this is our clarion call to look at transformation at all levels, none the least of which is trying to relieve doctors of the burden of practicing defensive medicine because they're afraid that they're going to get sued if the outcome isn't perfect. So they practice defensive medicine in an increasingly complicated technology-driven medical delivery system, which results in very expensive MRIs and PET scans and all of these medical marvels that are available to us, but maybe not applicable to every patient in every circumstance. And nevertheless, doctors order those tests because they're afraid that they might later be accused of not practicing the highest standard of medicine. And I had signed a letter along with a number of my colleagues saying that in order for us to support the bill, there had to be meaningful medical malpractice discussions. That hasn't happened in the bill. It is a promise from Dr. Governor Kitzhaber to come back to that issue later, to convene a work group of doctors and trial lawyers, and to convene that work group and to come up with proposed legislation for the 2013 session. And I'm afraid I've gone on an awfully long time. The point that I want to make is that we are working so quickly on such complicated issues that I don't think we are doing justice to the deliberative debate that should be occurring around these issues that will fundamentally transform how we deliver healthcare to the Medicaid population and then eventually to everyone, because this is the precursor organizational structure for a change in how we deliver healthcare to Oregon. And I don't think that we have done a thoughtful, careful job. And we're at the point right now where people are angry, they're threatening each other. I have said that I am not going to vote for this bill until some of my concerns can be addressed. And I am finding myself on the tip of the spear in terms of people's angst about the bill not passing. But I don't think I can responsibly support a bill that has as many unanswered questions as this one has.
And when you talk about being on the point of a spear, we talked about this in the last short session. I don't think so much, maybe a little bit in the last session, but the shorter one before that, where people would actually not vote for some piece of your legislation just because you didn't vote for theirs, regardless of the merits.
Yeah, no, that's correct.
And so that kind of stuff, is that starting to happen yet, or you haven't had all that many?
No, it's not that overt. What it is when we caucused at lunch today, one of our colleagues, who's a big supporter of this bill, announcing that anybody that didn't vote for this bill, the governor was going to be in their district making sure that people knew that XYZ legislator hadn't voted for this bill. Those are just unnecessary threats, in my view. We're all trying to get to a good conclusion here. Some of us just tend to be a little bit more methodical. And I am sympathetic to the people that have spent hours and hours and hours and hours in the meetings that have brought us to this point. What I am unsympathetic to is their lack of patience with the fact that amendments were slipped in quite late at night in the wrong venue. that made it very difficult to understand what actually this bill did, and for them to feel so threatened by what I think are appropriate questions to make sure that this is the intended bill and a good bill.
And it looks like the Marine Reserves bill that the Coastal Caucus put up there, and you were carrying that on the Senate floor, right, for the Coastal Caucus?
Correct. It was a Coastal Caucus bill that that I co-carried along with my Republican colleague, Senator Cruz, Jeff Cruz. And so we co-carried the bill, and it was up on the floor, yes.
It was up on the floor, and it passed, did it not?
It did. It passed 25-5. And I was very pleased by the overwhelming amount of support for the bill. I know that there are people that are still very, very unhappy. There were lots of emails floating around. I hope that we can address those questions in a thoughtful way. There's some misinformation floating around, but that doesn't surprise me when we're debating bills and they tend to be politically supercharged. The bill is now on its way to the House. It will have committee hearings over on the House side. And then, assuming that it makes it out of committee, it will be voted on the House floor. And if it receives the majority votes required to pass the bill, it will go to the governor for signature.
In your view, what is the good part of this bill? We've talked a lot about the fact that you believe it's a prophylactic against a big environmental group coming in and spending a bunch of money and launching a ballot measure campaign to lock up the entire Oregon coast for marine a network of marine reserves. And what do you think are the positive things that this bill does?
Well, it will be interesting to see whether the bill delivers the increase in marine life in those areas that are set aside. We will have to do baseline study to ascertain what's the starting point against which to measure any increase in marine life, whether it is older, more fertile females that are hanging out there and having offspring, and those juveniles then are reared and that causes there to be more fish. The outcome could be very positive on an ecological metric. What I'm going to be watching the most carefully for is whether or not there is a downside in terms of socioeconomic ramifications for coastal fragile communities. I mean, fragile in an economic sense. Garibaldi, where that's the closest to Cape Falcon, is the town that I'm the most worried about. It is, they have a report that says that they are the most vulnerable in terms of changes in fishing regulations. Conversely, a lot of good stuff is happening as a result of this bill. The ODF&W is working with the federal government to try to increase abundance, looking at stock assessments, trying to figure out about bycatch and mortality. We are working actively with the Port of Garibaldi on a Connect 4 grant that would rehab parts of their waterfront. I see economic opportunities as they begin to work on their wharf plan that isn't just reliant on fishing. It's reliant on other activities down on the working waterfront that is Garibaldi. And so there may be some work for local captains and local vessels in doing some of the baseline work. I believe that the Coastal Caucus throughout our districts that go all the way from the California border to Astoria will remain vigilant. I mean, if there are abrupt and shocking declines in economic activity, I would carry that to the 13 legislature in a heartbeat. So in the case of Cape Falcon, it's going to take quite a while for the data to be gathered, though, so the fishing prohibitions will not go into effect for a couple of years at a minimum. And but I think we can be informed by the work that starts in the south and moves north. Some of those areas have already been closed. And I know that comparing one area to another is like comparing apples to oranges. But if there are dramatic and demonstrable negative socioeconomic impacts, we always have the opportunity in the 2013 legislature to come back and try to make adjustments to the bill that would mitigate for or would address those bad socioeconomic outcomes. This is very much a work in progress. But just to conclude this, I believe absolutely that this was an opportunity to inoculate Oregon against a ballot measure that was from someplace other than Oregon that may lock up the entire coast. And if I have exercised an error in judgment, I guess I would have to say, you know, all of us are wrong once in a while. I have done the very best I can to contemplate what would occur if we do not put these limited, they represent 5% of the territorial sea. They are highly dispersed. They are narrowly defined. Accommodation was made in all of the marine reserves, particularly, well, mostly in Cape Falcon, to adjust it south to preserve certain rocks that are important to the fleet out of Garibaldi. Marine protected areas were put in place instead of marine reserves so that there would be access to crabbing and other fishing. And I have to believe that we have done the right thing and that ultimately this will be beneficial to Oregon's coast rather than risking the possibility that it could be completely put off limits by people who don't live on the coast, don't even live in Oregon.
And not only that, even if there wasn't a ballot measure, it's highly possible one of your colleagues might introduce something, a colleague not from the Coastal Caucus, that might introduce something that could pass and essentially do the same thing as a ballot measure might do.
Absolutely. I have to say that one of my urban colleagues was on record testifying on the floor that the oceans belong to everybody and people in the Pearl District have just as much claim on the oceans as people who live in downtown Garibaldi. I think coastal people who earn their living in the ocean might dispute that claim, but there are very strong advocates that are well connected in this building that have access to a great deal of money that I think could have swayed the outcome in a way that was detrimental to the coast. And I think we have put in place the opportunity to let this system work for a while to see whether or not it is as problematic as some people have prognosticated. I don't believe that it will be.
Senator, you got what? A couple more weeks of this to go, about 20 days left in the session. I guess that's 3 weeks, isn't it?
Yes, we've been put on notice that there may be some weekend sessions. The big stuff that's probably going to move is moving right now. And so there just simply is not enough time to move bills from the House to the Senate or the Senate to the House with a lot of amendments or adjustments or changes. And so we pretty much have the scope of the universe about how what's going to go. And having said that, there will be some weekend work. We still have the budget that we have to reconcile. After the revenue forecast came out, the budget writers went right to work trying to figure out what does this more favorable revenue forecast portend for how we conclude the budget. There are people that are still trying to get projects into the final reconciliation bill, that this is the final bill that is either the capital construction that will authorize what little bonding capacity we have to be able to build some new things. Or, you know, if there's a little tiny bit of money in free float someplace, there are 20 people that would leap on it like a panther. And so those negotiations are still ongoing. I'm working on a variety of issues that are germane to the budget. So there's still plenty to do. And we've been put on notice that in all likelihood, there are going to be some probably Saturdays, not Sundays generally, but probably Saturdays here. But this is, again, a very short session. And the Senate president, who was really the author of the notion of having annual sessions and shepherded it through two test sessions and then on to the November 2010 ballot. He is very interested in having this session conclude with no turmoil and just get our work done and go. That's why some of these committee hearings where they don't know exactly where all the votes are prior to the committee convening cause him to be grumpy. And so that's there's still plenty to do, and I believe that we will end on February the 29th, but it's going to be a gallop to that date.
what are some of the things, and we, and obviously on this show, it's about what you're doing this week and the bills that you're sponsoring and you're dealing with, but the legislature is doing more than just what you're involved with. So what are some of the other issues that have you concerned, paying attention? Obviously, we talked about healthcare transformation. Is there some public safety issues out there? We've gotten a couple of emails about that. Is there some public safety concerns out there that need to be addressed by this legislature?
Yes, there are. One of the recommendations in this budget would be to close a correctional facility on the Santa Yam, that's in the Salem area, and certainly the workers that work there are concerned. A question arose this morning about whether or not you could salvage that facility by not fully employing a hepatitis C protocol. There is some question about the efficacy of a certain interferon-related drug, and at that point, I have absolutely expired everything I know about the hepatitis C protocol. But there's question about if you took a subset of the prison population who suffer from hepatitis C and you tried a less expensive drug on end-stage chronic folks with hepatitis C, could you make a difference in that population where this other drug is deemed to be less effective on more emerging hepatitis or when you first have hepatitis C? And if you can keep the prison open, keep those jobs, reduce the scope of the people that are in the hepatitis C protocol, does that make sense? An idea like that has to, which is a new idea to this process, has to be sort of vetted in terms of, is it just one doctor's opinion about whether or not this drug makes a difference? Can you get any of the literature to corroborate that? Has it been used in other jurisdictions? Is there enough money to keep the facility open if you reduce the scope of the people that are served with the hepatitis C drug? So some of these ideas that float up in response to proposals have to be vetted, thought out, worked, and all of that takes an enormous amount of time with the clock ticking. Some of the other stuff that I'm watching very carefully is the county payments. The question about what do we do about these counties that are bordering on insolvency. The watershed folks were here, and I feel very badly that because they didn't have specific legislation, they were just here to talk to me about watersheds, that I didn't give them the time and the attention that they deserve. They're here to talk about a good program that's making a genuine difference in parts of Oregon. But because the legislature in a special session becomes so transactional, you know, tell me why you're here, tell me what you want, tell me what bill it is, and I'll go see if I can do something about it. I was just getting a report about the good work and the economic contributions of watersheds, and it was very difficult for me to figure out what do you want. It was so anomalous that somebody would just be coming in to explain to their legislator, we're doing good work and we just want you to know, that I was sort of obliquely unable to get what the presenter was saying, and I shouldn't have been so abrupt. I was just trying to ferret out, why are you here? All of this activity around bills and various and sundry things is interspersed with some social activities. The governor had us all up to Mahonia Hall for a little drink and a piece of cheese, and in the hope that when we get to know each other a little bit better socially, that maybe we can build the kind of trust relationships that legislatures and legislators in days gone by had. In the meantime, we're being pelted with lobbyists that are coming in increments of 15 minutes. Every 15 minutes, somebody else arrives during what little free time we have, arrives at the office to make a case for why a separate board of directors for PSU makes sense, why the reorganization at housing makes sense or doesn't. We had the county payments and what we're going to do about trying to make sure that these counties don't become insolvent. The Board of Forestry appointments were very controversial, and I was involved in many of those. Ellen Boggs and Mrs. Sammons from the Reinhardt Clinic were here yesterday to talk about the effect of the transformation bill on small rural primary care clinics like theirs. I met with Brigadier General Caldwell to talk about how do we train emergency managers in a way that makes more sense and is more coherent. Meantime, advocating for the bills that I'm worried about, we have to go to floor every day, the floor of the Senate, which takes up about an hour. We're not voting on controversial or numerous bills, but we have to go do that. I'm continuing to work on the implementation of two of the most important bills that I think have made it through last session and the special session before that. And those are the bills that define how businesses can access the state highway system. And frankly, we're struggling. We're having a hard time getting the rules written with ODOT. It isn't that Matt Garrett, the head of the agency, doesn't want to be cooperative and helpful. It's some of his mid-level managers that agree to one thing in the group meeting and then go out and do exactly the opposite. So that's ongoing. The weekends are taken up with various activities in the district. This weekend is the Napa School auction, which is not only a lot of fun, but raises very necessary money for the Napa schools. I've been privileged to be part of that for the last, I don't know how many years, and we're going to raise a whole bunch of money on Saturday for Napa schools. Senator Wyden is holding town halls in Tillamook and Columbia County on Saturday to try to get Oregon ahead of the curve when some of the debris comes from the Japanese tsunami, and to begin the planning effort to talk about that. So he'll be at the Forestry Center in Tillamook at 9 o'clock and at the Seaside City Hall at 2. He was in Scappoose last weekend. I have constituents coming during the weekends when I just can't do my constituent work because we're too busy here. So there's absolutely no shortage of stuff to do, and that just gives you a little hint of some of the other legislation that I'm kind of keeping my eye on and things that we're testifying on and worrying about.
All right, and with that, we're out of time for this week. You can reach Senator Johnson via email at questions, Q-U-E-S-T-I-O-N-S, at BetsyJohnson.com. You can like her page on Facebook. You can follow her on Twitter, and you can check out her website at www.BetsyJohnson.com. And if they'd like to reach you by telephone, how would they do that?
They can call the Salem office at 503-986-1716, or they can call and leave a message with the human or on the recorder at the district office, 503-543-4046.